What the fuck is up, everybody? Welcome to the Great Girth Podcast. I am one half of your favorite fat duo, Tony, with my other half, Mr. Austin Rollison. And joining us is a musician, guest, the one and only Drew.
Hey, guys.
Thank you, man, for joining us. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure, as you might know by now, we do our podcast a tad bit different when it comes to interviews. And I like to jump all over with questions. I don't give you the typical questions. It's more of a hangout scenario.
That's what I love about your guys' show, man. Like, it's a throwback to when podcasts were good.
You know, I got to say, man, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I agree. That's kind of the formula we try to follow. Like, that's because, man, podcasts have been around forever. People forget that.
Absolutely. You know,
they see, like, Joe Rogan and all that, and they think that that's the pinnacle. I'm like, no, you know, he made it big, but
you guys aren't afraid to be passionate either, to have opinions that are going to maybe ruffle feathers or be unsettling. One of my favorite moments was watching Austin rail on that Beyonce song. I watched that probably five times. Like, that was probably one of my, where it's just like, man, a lot of people feel this fucking way. And not everybody wants to say that kind of shit. And it gets, you know, hold on. I think we're having a quick equipment change out.
Oh, you're good, man.
Yeah, no, that that song really made me upset. And again, I've gotten a lot of heat for it. But again, I'm not angry at Beyonce. I'm angry at the record labels.
Yeah, and angry at what they're trying to say that it is when it's not really. It resonated a lot, especially as a guy who's like, I'm so tentative to call my music any genre because I feel like it doesn't kind of fall into any particular category right away. Like, you have to give it a listen to kind of decide for yourself. And like, so many people are so quick to throw things into whatever pile or in whatever little category. And I love your guys' take on that kind of stuff because there's no nuance anymore. It's either you're on this team or you're on that team. It's red or it's blue. It's black or it's white. You're in or you're out. There's no like little column A, little column B, politically, musically, artistically. It's kind of a bummer to see, like, we've lost that a little bit.
It really is, man. You look at it and you're like, God, it sucks because everything is so political now, you know, the entertainment, music, everything. But I think some people are kind of waking up to that. They're definitely getting a little sick of it, I guess, because there's a lot of even like mainstream artists that are trying hard to stay away from politics or hot topics because they just don't want to have to deal with repercussions, really, because in this day and age, you're not really allowed to defend yourself, especially in that position.
It gets so boring, too. Like, how many times in like the past 5 years have you like had a comedian that you're listening to and they get like to that place with politics or whatever where it clearly is becoming like a guided, directed rant, and it's like, I'm out. You've lost me. I don't want to hear that shit. I want you to talk about your wife being a pain in the ass or whatever else. Not that. Like, it's boring.
Well, yeah, it's sometimes it does feel a little intended. You know, like, I mean, one of my favorite movie studios is very preachy, and you know, a lot of people that are either apolitical or very political can kind of pick up on that. They're like, yeah, this shit's a little preachy, and that's okay. It's not really what I want to do. I actually mentioned this on our last episode that I do love politics, but I try to stay away from it sometimes, especially in movies and music. I just don't want to hear that stuff. Even if it's pro right or pro left, whatever side you're on, I don't want to hear it. That's not what that's there for.
Yes.
Now, if you can get away with making it a plot device, that works. This is an example I brought up before on the show too. The Jordan Peele film, Get Out, that movie, it's super woke, but if you look at it, they use the theme or the lecture as a plot device, and that actually works well. I thought, like, okay, that's perfect. If you could do it like that, instead of making the entire film, like, hate Whitey, then I'm all for it. You know, like, if you can kind of twist and turn knobs and get in my head a little bit, then cool, but it's very straightforward. It's very...
And it's a good
movie. You know where it's coming from. I know, dude. It's a very good.
And that's the main aspect, right? If you're going to preach, man, you can't suck. If you're going to preach about shit, like, it's got to be good. It's got to make me go like, okay, it's good enough to keep me here for your bullshit lecture. Like, all right. You know what I mean?
It's got to be impactful, which for me, that's why music is so important. Not just movies. I mean, music we go to for various reasons. The one of them I can tell you I don't go to is for politics. I mean, there's political singers, but I don't go to music for that. Music is sacred to me. Music is something that, while we may not all listen to the same shit, it all appeals to us in the same way, meaning it has some sort of value to you in here, which brings me to a very generic question, but I got to ask, why music? You know, what was that moment that kind of called you to it?
So I always grew up in a house where, you know, my mom sang her ass off. She had a great voice and she died young. So I think that was a major factor and influence in her. So I always was like a hobbyist. And a few years back, my wife had breast cancer and she motivated me to, and afterwards, thankfully she was good. We had, you know, the whole process of surgeries and reconstruction and everything that comes with that. And, you know, a year and change of life just being a complete upheaval. And I had always played music as a hobbyist and I always had a great time. I'd always sung in bands and she was like, man, like you should chase it. You should go after it one more time and see, you know, what happens. And so a couple years back, I was like, all right, let me get serious. A buddy and I cut a record. That record got the attention of a guy who I've become really good friends with, who owns a studio here, the studio I'm in right now, DB Studio in Boynton Beach, Florida. And he recently started a small record label. They signed me on, and for the past couple years, I've just been cutting tracks and cutting tracks and cutting tracks, and it's the funnest thing I've ever done. And I don't have anything that I enjoy other than like love making and eating that as much as music. You know what I mean?
I got to agree with you there, man. I love music probably almost as much as I love movies, because they come hand in hand and for me. Like,
oh yeah,
if I'm not listening to music, dude, I'm usually watching a movie or reading a book, but that's kind of hard to do.
Absolutely.
Sounds like she was an amazing woman, though, because not a lot of people can say that they had someone there for them like that. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You're married, right?
Yeah, I've heard
you
talk
about it. Yeah. So, like, when you are lucky to find a good one, you know what I mean? And you're lucky to have somebody who, like my wife's always been successful in her career. I was a failure of a kickboxer. Meaning as like, you know, I did okay, made some money, but unless you really make money, is it, you know what I mean? Like you batter your body. Yeah. You beat the shit out of yourself. You just, everything's all messed up for the rest of your life. And, you know, I boxed, I ended my career doing a little bit of mixed martial arts. Then I was kind of like in limbo, bouncer jobs, bodyguard jobs, you know, big boy jobs. And then I got into butchery and culinary school and stuff like that. And you know, it's all good. You know what I mean? It was all stuff I enjoyed doing, but music was always something I did for myself. And my buddy Mike and I, after Eva had her cancer, he's Jamaican and I'm mostly Cuban. I'm Cuban and Italian. And we're like, let's cut ourselves like a fun country, like Marty Robbins-esque album. And we cut this album called The Midnight Fires. We created a duo called The Midnight Fires. And that's what got the attention of, we came and cut a track here in this studio. And Dustin, who owns the studio, heard me and was like, shit, you can come and record here anytime. And after that, we cut that album and he hit me up and was like, that's a proof of concept, like of what you can do. I'd love to, you know, work with you. And then that was it. We were off and running. And I think the first week we worked together, I wrote like 40 songs and they were like, what? Yeah, they were shocked. And it was one of those things where I remember the first night he was like, these have to be written. Some of these have to be stuff you've got like somewhere. So write me a song about wiping your ass. And boom, we had a song about wiping your ass. Write me a song about a car wreck. We wrote it. And so all these, and then it was like, wow, he really can just do that. And I don't know if it comes from being from a shit talking Latin family. You know what I mean? I'm Italian on one side, Cuban on the other. If you don't speak, you don't eat. And clearly I eat. And so writing lyrics is all, cause I don't play any instruments or anything like that, but I can hear what I want in my songs. And so finding a team that has like help me be able to manifest that has been so cool.
I do got to ask you this then, just because this was from my experience. I was going to have an artist on here and he was signed to a label, but the label found out that we had political messages and they were not a fan. Are you going to get in any trouble on the show?
I'm very fortunate in that the guys that I work with are self-starters themselves. So like, they run the show for themselves. Like the two guys who own the label that I'm on are two guys who actually write a lot of my music with me, produce my music with me. And they're my boys. You know what I mean? And then that's the other thing too. When they were signing me, I was like 38 going on 39. You know what I mean? Like I'm established. I've got my pretty wife, healthy kid, house in Atlanta. You know what I mean? My grandma's place right down here, my wife's mother's place down. Like we're established. So there was no like that. I'm very lucky that I didn't get into this game at 20 because that's when they get you. You know what I mean? Like, and I was fortunate enough to get with guys who are like self-starters, business owners. We're in it for the same reasons. We want to develop something cool that we can slowly, because all my stuff is super organic. I don't like buy a bunch of ads. I've bought like 2 ads in the entire time, maybe 3 that I've been promoting this music, and like only recently, because just to see like what happens when you do these Instagram ads or whatever. And like, that's how I found you guys, man. Those shorts, those clips. And like the clips brought me to the YouTube shorts, and then the YouTube shorts brought me to the show. And I watched a few episodes and I was like, oh man, this is like old school on the couch podcast where people are being honest. And their takes, agree or disagree, are fucking solid. These guys have good ideas. Like, it's just, like I said, I love it. The throwback. I call you guys. I tell my wife, like, I'm going to go sit and listen to TNA. Like, and you know what I mean? Like, and just even something as simple as, like, the movie reviews, like the Spielberg one, where it's like, you then realize hearing you guys, it's like, man, this guy has made so many of the formative movies of my childhood and young adulthood and so on. Like, man, watching Saving Private Ryan with my granddad and him looking at me and being like, I didn't know this was going to be this kind of movie like in that opening scene. Like those moments are pivotal. And like you guys encapsulate that. And then again, like on the other more serious stuff, like I think you guys encapsulate the way a lot of people feel, you know what I mean? And are like worried about their job or their whatever. They don't want to say this or that or the other. Sorry. I'm tangential. I'm a talker.
Oh, no, you're fine, man. That's perfect. Cause I'm a talker too, man. I sometimes have to stop myself because I'll get into a topic, dude, and I just don't stop, especially with movies. Like our podcast, we try to do more movies. We've been doing a lot of the rankings because people, for whatever reason, man, people love hearing people rank stuff, whether it's it's just a thing. So I was like, well, let's try that. Cause what a lot of people don't know about me, if they haven't heard the show, is that I'm a very, you know, movie person. I love talking movies. I try to incorporate that on the show, but we're just all over, man. I think that's kind of what's always been our biggest strength, but it's also a vice in a sense. Like, I couldn't tell you how many people are like, yeah, well, you guys are very unorganized and you need to figure out where the fuck you're going because you're everywhere. And I was like, yeah, I understand that, but I kind of like that. I like that we just jump into it because people just don't talk anymore, even to your homies, dude. Like,
absolutely.
When you're with them, dude, you're still on your phone, you know? People just don't talk. And I was like, man, I remember being younger. I'm not that. I'm like 31. But when I was like 18, 19, dude, I used to go with my buddies to like the local Denny's or any of the mom and pop shops that were around. We would sit down, drink coffee, thinking we were cool, have conversations and other
people. And you're locked in. You're locked in with each other. You don't have 50. And as a dad, too, you know, like you can't even put down the phone. No. You know what I mean? Like, it's like when my shit vibrates in my pocket, it's like I have to check it. I got to make sure everything's okay at a minimum before I can continue on with my conversation or my meal or whatever. And like, I think it's one of those things that like, why this is for me such a treat when I hear you guys talking. And the other guy you guys have on often, Alcazaz, I think is his name.
Oh, Alex. Yeah. I love that guy.
I love, because you guys all come in at things from a different take. But, and again, fostering conversation where that's like almost frowned upon now, you know what I mean? Like you can't be honest, you can't have open like, you know, and I'm like an oversharer in by nature, you know what I mean? My wife is always like giving me the elbow at parties when I'm like just yammering about random whatever, and it's like, you're making everyone uncomfortable talking about a trans swimmer, and it's like, all right, I hear you, like stop elbowing me in the leg.
It's hard not to, though, man. I mean, I'm the same. I think the reason why is because I've always believed that if you don't speak your opinion like straight from the heart, you're kind of sacrificing who you are as a person. You're just, when you sugarcoat, you're basically screwing up any potential possibility for you in your life, whether it's meeting a new friend or meeting a fucking frenemy, dude, because I've got plenty. I have about 15 people that do not like me personally that actively listen to the show. I gotta be honest, like that's cool for me, you know, because I'm like, hey, at least you're paying attention. And they've told me, like, you know, we enjoy the show, we just don't like your message, that's all. I'm like, okay, well then let's talk about it. That's what the show's for. But c- because, you know, we'll have anyone on, man. I had a friend, an old friend that I knew since like middle school, and he's a, I don't really know what to call him. He's like a hardcore socialist, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he's a left leaner, and I had him on, and it was a great conversation, and people were shocked about that. I was like, yeah, I'll have anyone on. I just, there's got to be a conversation. And if it gets heated, then it only gets better, because I'm a person that when it starts getting heated, I'm like, all right, I can throw fire, you know, like,
yes,
I'm not going to bitch out or throw you off my show. I'm just like, you know, it's good to have those. Sometimes, yeah, and things get violent, but.
And please teach me something. That's like the thing I think we've lost a little bit generationally. There's this whole thing of like, I don't agree with you, you're the enemy, where it's like, I don't know, man. Like, people ask me all the time, like, something you said resonated with me just now. Like, I've been married, like, I think 13 or 14 years now. And my wife and I have been together. We've known each other since high school. We've been together since college. Damn. And yeah, and people ask, like, how do you do that?
Right.
She just knew exactly what kind of piece of garbage that I was from day one. The exact animal that I was, I never sugarcoated it. I never did the whole thing of like, gonna act like I'm this great guy and then slowly show her all. No, man, it's like, this is me. I'm an imperfect human being. I'm a normal person. I've got amazing benefit. I've got negatives, all the pluses and that. And so if you give that to all of your relationships, I feel like I've have so many friends that have been my friends for decades or a decade or what have you. And I think those relationships exist just based on just being, because some friends will be like, oh, you're an asshole. That's a stupid take or whatever. And like, still love you. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, we're still boys. You still know I'm the guy you can call. You know what I mean? You still know that if you have a family member die or what have you, like, you can call me and I'm here for you. You know what I mean? Like, whether I think Trump is funny or not, or you think he's a Nazi or not, or whatever. Like, right. And that's the other thing too. You can't even have a tact of like, I remember sharing Trump memes and having friends getting really fucking mad at me in that first 2016 run. Right. And I was like, I don't even agree or disagree. It's just, this guy's hysterical. Like, you know what I mean?
He
like,
says funny shit, dude.
He's that's wild. Why. He's, yeah, the boy is wild. And I'm from Florida. Like, I'm from South Florida. That guy has been a fixture in our culture for decades and decades. He battled with the city over a flagpole for years and eventually beat them with this like giant monstrous flagpole because he built the earth up underneath it in order to not have the flagpole be the height that it shouldn't be. Like, the dude is a cartoon character. And it's the same thing with Biden. He's ridiculous. It's hilarious. Yeah. You can't take a side. It's all stupid. It's all so stupid. Like, that's the thing that always kind of gets my frustration, I guess, with our new generation of people, where it's all this. I remember everybody thinking all the presidential candidates were dumb when I was young.
Fucking dumb. Yeah. I was going to say, man, when I was in high school, you were a sucker if you fucking followed the news.
If you simped for a politician, like, ugh. Like,
yeah, dude.
Bush and Gore were both lame. Clinton is a dork. Like, I don't care about any of the. They're all dorks that want that job in the first place. And not dorks that are cool, like, for loving Star Wars like I happen to. I mean, dorks that suck. Like, just, I'm very, like, shocked at this new world of like picking that team. They're all lame teams. Pick your team. Like, pick your community's team. Pick your friend's team. Like, oh no, you don't talk to your uncle anymore because he likes this one politician and you don't. Like,
yeah,
man, that's commie stuff. That's like separation. That's divide and conquer. That's like, it's weird. It's a weird time. And so, like, even with my music and stuff, where I'm like, I'm never talking about anything political. I'm never, but I'm coming just straight from the guts. And that's the way I talk to people too. You know what I mean? So, like, I've had friends get mad at me, tell me I'm stupid, tell me I'm this. Cause, like, I would joke and say, like, oh, we don't do the census. I'm Cuban. We don't do paperwork. Like, we don't, right. There's no. And then I got my buddy who grew up in a nice place with a nice family and a nice community. He's like, that's where you get all your voting power. You have to do the census. And I'm like, we don't open the door for government people. Like, that's it. Like, and that's... but. We're coming from a different world. You know what I mean? And you can't even have that conversation anymore where it's like, oh, you guys did. It's nice that you were able to do that. You lived in your community where you trusted the government. My family was like, we've seen what they did before. We don't trust them now. Dude. Don't tell them how many people live here, how many guns are here. Tell them nothing. Like, it's a different game.
Well, I've never really been a friend of the government. I've always viewed them as evil, but and like,
they've never been a friend to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like, yeah. Man, I remember you were hip and cool if you hated the government, you hated the president. Now you're hip and cool if you like the current president or, well, whichever falls in line with that agenda. Because as much as we'd like to say everything is political, the unfortunate part is everything is also left and right, which sucks.
Yes. Yes.
Which is retarded, in my opinion, because I'm like, dude, and I've said this before, too, people vote based on emotion, and that's never a good thing. You should never just vote for someone because they're Republican or Democrat. Like, that's not really a good campaign to run. That's not a good thing to stick to either, in my opinion, Absolutely. Because there's plenty of freaking politicians, man, that I liked everything they said, but then they would say one thing, and I was like, okay, that one thing is why I won't vote for you.
Right.
It's not because you're a Democrat or a Republican. It's just I liked everything you said up until this one point. That's how I would vote. And then people try to, you know, catch me up, especially friends. They're like, well, you're a right leaner. You haven't voted Democrat in years. You said you'd never vote. And I said, I said I would not vote for a Democrat if he didn't have traditional family values.
Right.
That's something I do look for because I'm not really anti-Democrat. I'm more, I think I'm just more or less anti-team, anti-label. Like fucking, I've said this before too, and I don't know where I got this from. It was probably a movie, but Republicans aren't good with the truth and Democrats aren't good with money. That's the best way to distinguish the two.
Absolutely. And that's the importance of having both of these groups like organize and work together, right? Like there was a time where I think we understood better that you have to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that to make the American thing work. Like yep. It's a combinative system. And the fact that we're going so staunch one way or the other with whomever it might be, that's where we like, that's the disconnect. Like it's called the American experiment for a reason. It's because we don't have this clearly defined left or right, you know, organization. We have a balance. We have this delicate, you know, line that we kind of like tiptoe along. And it's weird to see it kind of change in our lifetime. You know what I mean? Like, and again, like as a kid, you know, you talk about like nobody cared who the president was. When I was kickboxing, especially in the early days of my career in combat sports, like we were all supposed to be rebelling. I remember I got to a point in combat sports where like I was all busted up and I was like in my late 20s and everything hurt all the time. Wasn't making good money. Thank God I had a great girlfriend who's become a wonderful wife and who, you know, I could literally give my check to and she could be like, I don't know if you've ever seen that meme with Chunk and the guy from the Goonies with the, like, you're going to live with me now. That's totally, that was me. And like, so like that vibe and that whole situation, like I remember waking up one day and being like, oh, I'm the only one out here left in the rebellion is what it felt like. That's my buddies work for companies and they have corporate jobs or they went to school. They work. One guy works at Best Buy for the past 10 years. And it's like, I'm out here like trying to be this weird thing that's on its own. And you learn like, oh, that's what happens with everybody's political think down the line. Eventually, they just kind of get tired or lazy or stupid. Yep. And they stop looking into the nuances and into the folds of things. It's easier to check the box. Oh, I live in a neighborhood where everybody goes blue. So I'm just going to go blue so I don't have any arguments with my fucking neighbor. Like, it's weird.
Yeah, it's funky that we don't talk. I mean, I remember in high school, I had friends that were of a mixed batch, which is something you don't really see these days. I mean, I didn't follow politics when I was younger. Like when I was in high school, I did see signs of like brainwashing and indoctrination happen amongst teachers, whether it be left or right. But I didn't pay attention because I spent most of my high school time getting high, ditching class, not going to school until it really mattered. Then I
enjoying yourself.
I was fucking off, but I can tell you right now, as a person that was like anti-politics, I had a friend who was super Republican. He was super Christian. And that dude smoked weed with us. You know, like people were able to talk. I had one friend that was a goth. I was a little bit like, I don't understand that shit. I mean, we all have our phases, whatever. And that person still hung out with us.
Yeah.
And it's weird that we can't have that now.
I think we're the last, like you said, you're 31.
Yeah.
I'm 40. So I'm like 9 years older than you. I think our cluster of generations, that those couple, were the most naturally progressive. Like, we all wished Uncle Phil was our dad. You know what I mean? We all understood that In Living Color was the best comedy show on television and so on and so forth. Like, we were naturally integrated where you, like you said, you had a goth kid. Because as you're saying it, it's like me and my best friend were on the wrestling team and played magic cards. You know what I mean? And so you had this balance of like, You can be a jock and a dork and a prep, and you got a goth kid in the same crew, and the one kid who just goes fishing every fucking weekend. Like, you had all these guys at the same house party every weekend. You know what I mean?
And
you don't have that as much anymore. I look at my kid, she's 9, and the friend groups are so much more homogenized now, comparatively.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's so much more of a, like, everybody's from the same tax bracket, everybody's in the same neighborhood, because all the playdate has to get arranged by mom and dad on the phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When we were kids, you saw the tangle of bikes on the lawn, and you knew that's where it was going down. You went to that house. You went to go hang out with your buddies wherever you saw the cluster of scooters and skateboards and whatever else. Like, that's gone now.
Like, it is, man. There's not even hangouts anymore, because I've talked to, you know, I got some younger siblings. Well, they're not that young. They're like 20, but they fall under that cluster. I mean, and I hate to single people out, but realistically, if you look at it, man, anyone born after like 2000, 2001, unfortunately, they're living in a world that's a lost cause.
It's a completely different experience. Yeah.
Yeah. It's way different for them. But if you were born before that, sure, a lot of the stuff we grew up on had its progressiveness in it, because anyone can argue that shit is woke now. Well, if you really look at stuff, man, shit was always woke. It's just, it's different. Now is a more, because we figured out how to isolate people, I think it's easier for that message, whoever is pushing it, it's easier for them to do it without having to hide, because they figured out if you tell these kids this is hip, this is popular, and they're on TikTok, they're going to follow it, because, man, I didn't get into like MySpace and Facebook and all that until I was about high school, middle school. Because back then when they had those things, man, you needed a computer. You really couldn't do it on your phone yet. And when you did, it sucked. You still had to go on the computer. So
absolutely.
We were like, fuck that. Let's go outside. You know, like we didn't have platforms telling you who to vote for. That right there, that's concerning, though, when you have these social media sites that have news on them.
These powerful organizations that are pushing and corralling people into one direction or another. And that's the mechanism now is shame, right? Where it's like, you're a this, you're a that. You know what I mean? Where and part of the problem is that there's this 100% buy-in. Even like, so like I still would train jiu-jitsu when I'm back home in Atlanta from time to time. And in the gym that I was in, some of the best guys, man, but they were a lot of the time diehards on the right. And for me, it's like one of those things where like, I can't go either. I feel like I'm a countryless on either side. And so like these guys were talking about Trump, and I'm a gun guy to a certain degree. I grew up with a Cuban dad who was big on like, you need to bear arms because they took our country, 'cause we couldn't, like that was his whole tact. Right. And so Trump wasn't a great president for the Second Amendment. He just wasn't. He banned bump stocks. He had a bunch of different stuff. And I remember like pulling that up for a buddy, because it's one of those things where you hear enough and you're like, all right, fucker, we're going to go figure this out.
Yeah, like you need to see this. Yeah.
And so I pulled and I was like, he's no friend to that. And it's fine if you still like the guy, but if you're going to talk about being a single issue voter and still vote for somebody who doesn't support that issue, like you're nuts. You should have gone for what was the guy who couldn't name Turkey or whatever?
Who
you know what I'm talking about? That's the last guy I voted for. Threw my vote down a well. Fucking what do you call? What was his name? Was it Gary something?
God, if only Austin were here. Unfortunately, he had to step out early.
No worries. You know exactly what I'm talking about. He was the third party candidate in the Hillary Clinton and Trump, you know, the most sensationalized election in our lifetimes for sure. You know what I mean?
I mean, you know what's weird, dude, is I didn't vote for Trump the first time because growing up, I grew up in a very Republican household, but my parents didn't really like explain politics to me because they saw it as, you know, you're a kid, you really don't need to know that shit. And by the time I was in high school, it was too late because I didn't care.
Right.
So I was going through my rebellious phase. But when I went to college right out of high school, I started like feeding into shit and I was like hardcore leftist. I was a socialist, this and that. And Trump was elected, and I was one of those people that threw a fit, man. I'll admit it. If people want to dig up my past, dude, I was one of those people that threw a temper tantrum about Trump winning. But then a month goes by, and I was like, you know what? I got to do what my parents taught me, which was no matter who was president, you support them to do good.
That's gone, too. Do you remember that sentiment? That sentiment used to be like – I remember the first election that I can remember at all being aware of was Bush Dukakis. And yeah. I remember sitting with my grandfather. I'm sorry, I don't think it was, but I think it was Reagan Dukakis, maybe.
I can't, what, white?
No, I think it was the first Bush. It was Bush 1 and Dukakis, I think. And I remember my granddad being like a, you know, a Catholic Italian guy, he's Republican, and he was like, yeah, I want Bush to win, but whoever the president, you want him to do a good job. And I remember hearing that the first time from him. Whoever does win, you hope they're going to do a good job.
Yeah, you
and
want
I feel
them
like that's to... gone. That's fucking, is, that's man. Way gone.
It is, man, because like, as much as I can't stand Biden, I'm like, dude, can you please do something about these gas prices?
I feel so
and these
bad for
prices?
Him, too. I feel
well, he's
so...
not there, man.
I know. It's like,
that's what's fucked up. It's like elderly abuse.
Yeah. Yes. It's absolute. I remember my mom working in nursing homes as a kid. She was a haircutter first. She would cut. She was a hairstylist, and she would go into the nursing homes as a volunteer. And then later on in her life, she became like an activities director in a nursing home, and singing to the old people. And she would bring me and my siblings there, and they'd be like having serious dementia, and be like, hey. I remember a lady came up and she was like, oh, my grandson. And I was like, I'm not your grandson. And I remember my mother snatching me into a side closet and being like, anybody who thinks they're your grandparent, you're their grandson. Don't let me see you be mean to any of them again. They don't know the difference, and don't let them. And I remember being like, all right. And all of a sudden we had like 1,000 grandparents. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful experience. And I think that like, I see that guy, and it reminds me of those folks who just didn't know where they were, didn't know what was going on. And I feel, who wants to be spending that phase of their life with that kind of stress and that kind of pressure? It's so sad. It bums me out bad. Bums me out bad. And if he debates Trump, it's going to be sad.
It is, man.
It's
going to
be really a bummer.
See, and that's why, like, I like Trump just because he was a shit talker, and I voted for Obama the second time because I was old enough to do so.
I voted for Obama the first time because he was going to close Guantanamo and because he's going to legalize weed. And he tricked me. And after that, all I could think about for the rest of my life has been, can we reincarnate Ross Perot? Can we bring that guy back and let him fucking finish his sentence and explain to us how we're getting shafted in every election?
Shit, man. I remember when Obama said he was going to legalize marijuana. And I'm from Colorado. We were the first state that legalized it.
Yeah.
It sounded cool, but fast forward like 10 years later, dude, it sucked. That's why we have like so many of these people that just came here and overpopulated the fuck out of this place and their politics they brought with them. Colorado is pretty neutral. It's always just been like left or right. It's not really.
Colorado, I think, was one of those places you used to be able to call classically liberal. Where it was like, if it's going on your lawn, I don't give a shit. We need guns out here because stuff lives in the hills. We don't want to, we want our space. You know what I mean? Like that used to be such a dope state to visit, and I haven't been there in a while now. And because the last time that I went with my family, there were so many dirty hippies near our Airbnb that I was like, oh, Boulder's not the same anymore. Like it's not a fun place to hike and see elk anymore. It's like a bunch of patchouli smelling losers asking me for money.
Boulder, man, turned into UC Berkeley, basically.
The last time I went, I was like, wow, I'm sad. Like I'm sad. I used to go there often with friends and it wasn't the same.
Oh yeah. As a kid, man, we would go to downtown, have fun. And I work downtown. That's where my office is, but I try hard not to go down there, man, because it is not what it used to be. And like downtown Denver's always had a crime problem, but once they legalized marijuana, man, all these homeless people showed up. All these people from California showed up with no direction or like drive.
Yeah.
They became homeless and now everything is out of control, dude. Like I'm talking businesses are boarded up because of all the riots we've had. Well, they call them protests, but
right.
Yeah. Anyway. There's that. There's shit on the sidewalks. There's needles in the gutters. Like, it's a shit show here. It's to the point where my wife and I, for the last like couple of years now, have been talking about moving.
Come on down to the South, baby. Let me tell you, it's one of the things that, you know, my wife happens to be Jewish and Israeli at that. And so with everything that's been going on in that part of the world, it's been worrisome. And you know, you see these protests and, you know, we're Florida kids. So like the fact that she happens to be Jewish, I happen to be Cuban, whatever, like it's never been an issue, but now like other people have made that an issue. And I heard her talking to her cousins who were checking on her from Israel, and they were like, are you guys okay? You know, we see all the riots, we see all the hate. And yeah, she's like, you know what? I would have never thought one of the safest places in America for a Jew right now would be the South, because we have the right to protect ourselves here. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
that's, I think, the difference, to be honest with you. Like, you have a lot of people who are willing to say, like, no, we're not going to do it, you know, and we're not going to play that game. And I'm in Florida now, you know, down here recording and rehearsing for an upcoming run of shows. And Florida's good. Like, Florida's all right. And I go other places, and there's homelessness everywhere. There's always been homelessness here, especially seasonal. You know, the trains just kind of come loaded during the cold months. And then by the summer months, they're all dying and they get the hell out of here. You know what I mean? Like, it's been like a natural cycle since my childhood. But the ride down has never been so fraught with so much home. So many like truck stop encampments, and Atlanta's going through the city is like that now. And it's like, it's very interesting to see where the line gets drawn, where these certain communities and certain tax brackets decide, like, we're not doing it, we're not playing the game. And the South is all right. The South is doing A-OK, because personal freedom is still, like, really, really, really important to people. And the notion of, like, passing out needles, or, like, you know what I mean, it being legal for you to shit outside or shoot up outside is so wild to me, coming from the South, you know? And, like, I think I was last in San Francisco, like, 10 years ago. And my wife and I were there for like a gourmet food and wine festival, and seeing like pictures and stuff now of the same places that we used to enjoy going and visiting. It's like, wow, like, holy shit.
Well, it's funny you mentioned it, man, because Florida is exactly where we're moving to. Well, that's where that's where we have our sights set, because we went a few years ago. Well, originally we were going to move to an area called Henderson right outside of Las Vegas, but our biggest gripe was, it's a dry heat, and I like humidity, man. I'm one of the few people in this world that loves humidity.
I'm born down here in the gritty. I know exactly what you mean, where it's like, keep me moist and young. Like,
dude, that's really, it feels good, and I have asthma, so it's great for my fucking lungs, dude. I love my allergies. Wife loves it.
No pollen season, because everything's always bloomed up. There's no like big bursts of any of that shit. It's a little crazy in certain places, but it's not crazy in the way the rest of the country is right now. It's crazy, you know, like, Florida's just got its own flavor. You know what I mean? Like, it's the only place you could be walking down a canal bank and startle a nest of iguanas that dive into a canal and a gator grabs one. Like, it's like, on my drive down, I've saw turkeys and hogs and gators on the highway. You know what I mean? Like, on the ride down, it's its own thing. But in that, it's like, so unique and dope, and there's no like city that no one can go into, that like when in Portland, where they just gave up a chunk of the city to like a mob of unruly hobos or whatever. Like,
right,
it's not happening in Florida. You're gonna get a bunch of retirees from New York who are ex-cops, and a bunch of good old boys, and a bunch of wild Cubans and Jamaicans are gonna come through and clean house. And that's the other thing too that I try and explain to people on a regular basis who preach a leftward ethos, where it's like, bring in everybody from everywhere. And it's like, these folks you're bringing in do not share the values that you espouse. Like, I come from a Latin American family. They're staunchly conservative, and they're going to utilize the advantage of you allowing them to come in.
Yeah.
Whether it's my Colombian cousins or my Dominican cousins or my Cuban cousins. And when they get here, they're going to Catholic church, they're raising kids, they're going to try and start businesses. They're going to vote right because they don't believe in any of that. The one that got me most of all was Latinx.
Yeah, dude, it's so fucking stupid.
It's like white ladies are trying to tell us how to speak now. That's what it just felt like. You know what I mean? Like, and so like coming from a Cuban house, it's like, I've never heard anyone express any concern over the masculine and feminine in the language of Spanish. Like, are you kidding me? Like, whoa. It's,
well, the funniest thing, man, is like the people that are bitching about stuff the most, the people that are trying to change basic biology and the way we look at others, are white liberals. And I hate being a racist person, because that sounds like I'm being racist, but it's ironic that it's white people.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to be racist about it. That's white lady shit. It's not even the bros, dude. It's not even the bros.
Right.
You can't even put it on the bros. There is a value put on like just being nice by women that doesn't exist in men.
It's a trophy, you know.
Absolutely. And with how many times like you're out with your wife and some shit happens, like just be nice, like don't make way, like the attitude of don't make waves, just be nice, let them, just let them, like that's a very feminine tack yeah. to take, whereas every now and then you might have to tell somebody to go fuck off, and like that's just an aspect of life, and yeah. I think we've like let that get away from us, the importance of that, you know what I mean, like
I agree.
You know Billy Connolly, the comedian?
Yes, I do.
He's got that great little blip from an interview where he's like, doesn't matter where you are, you could be in Tibet, you could be in Ireland, you tell somebody fuck off, like they know exactly what you mean.
Yeah,
like,
that's,
you
know, true.
The tone and tenor tells everything you need to tell. And we've lost that ability to just like casually say fuck off. Like, hey man, fuck off with your shit. Like, I remember being, when my daughter was about 4, so like 5 years ago, in a Starbucks grabbing a coffee. Girl has pink hair. My daughter's like, her hair's pink. And I was like, how cool is that? That's punk rock shit, kid. And the girl goes and she's like, well, not everyone who looks like a girl is a her. And I go, fuck up.
Not with my kid.
My kid gets to be 4, bro. Leave her the fuck alone. I don't care what you, go ahead, identify. You can be a purple-headed unicorn. I don't give a shit. Fine.
Right.
I have a brother who is considers himself trans and is, you know, a they, them and all that stuff. And I feel like if you have a big enough family, you're going to have a few of those or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Love them. Love them still. Leave the kids the fuck alone. Let them kids alone. Let the kids kid, bro. Let the kids. That's, I feel so strongly about that. And there was even one point in time where she and he, you know, he was like telling her, you know, oh, I'm a dog or whatever. Cause he, you know, that's his thing. And she was like, no, you're not. And she was like 5 or 6 at the time. And I was like, buddy, 5 or 6 year olds, all they know is animal facts. You want to know the land speed of a cheetah? You want to know the only American marsupial? She's got you. Like, she knows all that. And that's all she knows. And you're going to tell her you're a dog. It's not going to work out. It's not going to be a good conversation. And it wasn't. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It's going to fuck kids up too, man. Like, that's why I'm so like anti the like teaching kids that shit in school. Cause I'm like, dude, we don't even teach them about fucking the opposite sex. Why do we need to teach them about like all that other shit? Because that's the thing, man, is I think that kids need to be kids, and you know, all that I'm this, I'm that, or I might be gay, I might be, I don't know what, that's college talk. That's when you're out in the fucking world
even
doing what
high
you
school
want.
And even at that point, it's like my daughter recently asked me about, you know, what's gay.
Yeah.
And she's like, how does somebody become gay? And I was like, you don't become gay, it's, you know, it's how you feel about people. So you look at somebody and you like them, that's, you know, if you're gay or straight. And we talked about it. And I was like, well, do you have anybody you have a crush on? She's like, turns red. She's like, yeah, a boy in my class. And I was like, all right, so then you're not gay. You like boys. So just, you know, that's it. Like, simple. And that's where that conversation should take place.
Yeah.
Should take place in the home with the parents, deciding how to express that to their child based on their child's maturity and all those kind of things that parents should be deciding. And it's such a bummer to see so many kids get confused by, like, somebody who doesn't even have their own kids, like, and has this like political agenda behind what they're trying to teach kids. And it's like,
it's unfortunate, man.
Bro, they should just get to play pretend. My kid should be able to pretend that she's an X-Man or a Jedi or whatever she's doing. You know what I mean? Watch Miraculous and pretend she could turn into a ladybug and like enjoy herself. That's what kids should be like. She should learn math and she should learn to read properly and how to conjugate verbs and shit, and then she should learn, you know what I mean? That's it. That,
yeah, like they
she
don't
should go on a field
about
trip to the planetarium. That's it. Yeah. Like, leave her alone.
Yeah, they don't need to learn about like genders and stuff like that. Like, they don't need that shit. Let them be kids. No. And you can't even say that, because then it leads to, oh, trans hate this and that. I'm like, dude, I've said this before too. I don't hate any of these motherfuckers. I just have a problem with being told that I have to conform to this message or that. And Dave Chappelle did a skit about this too in one of his specials, where he said that essentially, and I might be fucking this up, but basically he was like talking about how a lot of, you know, trans people, the reason for the argument and the rise up and all that, and why we care so much about them, is because of how they feel, you know, how they feel inside. And he's like, bro, since when has anyone in America ever given a fuck about how any of us feel inside?
Yes. You know,
and that's why he's like, what the fuck is this?
There's a comedian that I love called Kurt Metzger, and he is a guy who ruffles a lot of feathers, and he's been a writer on more stuff than he's actually been like a stand up. I feel like he had a special come out, I think, called White Precious. And he has a bit where he talks about a gay person or a trans person, I forget which, complaining about the hardships that they had to go in school And it's like, I got beat up, I got picked on, I got called the F word. And then he's like, oh, like everyone in school? Like,
yeah, I've been calling that word on a daily.
That's exactly, that is exactly, am I gay? Because that exactly happened to me. Like, it's one of those things where, like, yeah, we're all just chimps at a certain age.
Yeah.
And we all treat each other poorly. And if you got a weird foot, you're going to be the weird foot kid. If you're fat, you're going to be the fat kid. If you're too gangly and tall, you're going to be the too gay. Like, that's how kids are. Kids are just assholes. They're base assholes. And so, like, I remember what the first time my daughter, she must have been 4 maybe, and we were in Nantucket on, like, a little family vacation for Father's Day. My wife had a work thing up there. And she was like, oh, come up with the kid. I'll rent it. It was just a beautiful little trip. And she had just gotten over cancer, so it was nice to get away. And we saw a guy who had amputated legs and had the Lieutenant Dan, you know, metal prong legs.
Yeah.
Her eyes got big, and she looked at me, and I was like, whatever you have to ask me, you can ask me, but wait until we're in the car. And she's like, okay. And I was like, I know exactly what you want to ask me. Because at first she's like, yeah, but, and I was like, I know exactly what you want to ask me. I understand, and I know it's wild, but you have to wait until we're in the car, and I'll answer every question. And we get into the Uber heading back to the little cottage, and she's like, why did that guy have metal legs? And, like, I just had to explain to her, some people get diseases or injuries or whatever.
Yeah.
But all it took was an explanation, relax, like, calm. Kids, they want to know everything, and when you give them unfiltered shit without the proper context, it can get weird and confusing and frustrating for them.
Yeah. They listen to everything you say, man. I mean, I'm currently dealing with, so my oldest, she's 9, almost 10. And yeah, dude, she's in that age right now where she's kind of picking up on bullshit, and she's smart for her own good that she can kind of cipher some of it. But
yes,
when it comes to other things, she does have questions, and it's stuff that I'm like, you're at that age where I feel like I need to answer it because you guys are moving faster than any of us ever did.
Absolutely.
Just because, you know, if you don't tell them, dude, unfortunately, they become that kid that just found out Santa isn't real. Like, that's not fair to them, you know? Like,
yes.
And I wish it wasn't like that, because when I was 9, dude, I didn't know what gay or any of that shit was. I didn't even ask my parents, because we were...
I knew I had an Uncle Pat and an Aunt George. That was the closest thing I knew. And then they both gave great, great gifts because they had dual income and no kids. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
They were roommates. At every Christmas, you know, get together. Oh, my roommate George, like 20-year roommates. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And eventually, when I got to like late junior high, I was like, "Oh, Uncle Pat's gay." Oh,
it makes sense. Yeah, like it makes sense now. But yeah, that's how you gotta treat kids, in my opinion. I think that the reason that a lot of people with political agendas fuck with kids is because a child's mind is so like, unfortunately, undeveloped, that it's
malleable.
Easier to tame them, because if you can feed them that bullshit and brainwash them at an early age, dude, it's hard to break that when you get older. Like, it really is. And unfortunately, I do feel like people have to raise their kids now with a political agenda, which sucks ass, because I don't want my kids going to school being called conspiracy theorists and right wingers.
Right.
But
yeah,
I also have to tell her the truth. Like, hey, look, some people think they can be this gender or that. Let it be. Don't patronize them. Don't ask them stupid questions, because that's going to offend them too. And unfortunately, because you're a child, you don't know this stuff. So your best bet is to be nice to them, and that's it. Like, don't fucking, you know,
that's
you can even befriend them if you want, but it's because too, because she's, you know, in school. And the county I live in is actually pretty good for schooling, because that was my first thought when we moved here, was what kind of bullshit are my kids going to be learning? And as long as they're not teaching them critical race theory or anything that'll cripple their future, I'm fine with it, because I want my kid to learn history, math, science, all the basic needs. Everything else I can teach her at home. You know, well, like,
it's so interesting too, when you talk about something like critical race theory, where like, who decided what this hierarchy of oppression is?
Right.
I'm seeing now it's like Jews being one of the like smallest minorities on the planet. They don't get lumped into that. Like, they don't get that same push. And then at the same time, it's like, oh, but we also can't talk about the bad things about any culture, whether it's a small group or like, I'm Latino. There's a lot of wife slapping going on. Nobody wants to talk about that. There's also a lot of, in the Latin community, when you have a creepy uncle, it's like, don't sit on Tio Pepe's lap. Well, or how about shoot Tio Pepe in the yard? What are we doing here?
Like, seriously.
Why do we cover up for the worst versions of us constantly in every community? We can't talk about crime in the Black community. We can't talk about fatherlessness. We can't talk about domestic abuse in the Latin community. We can't talk about homophobia in the Latin community. We can only talk about those things when it benefits vilifying one group or another. Because you could talk about it with rednecks. You can call rednecks cousin fuckers and wife beaters and all that kind of shit. They're not protected. They don't have that protection. You don't know how many times that I've been like espousing a belief and people get offended. And then it's like whisper, whisper. Oh, he's Cuban. That's okay then.
Yeah.
Or even like, been in a rough neighborhood as a kid in a Black neighborhood, walking with a friend and somebody be like, hey, what the fuck you doing out here, white boy? And then my buddy be like, no, he's a Chico. He's cool. And it's like, oh, okay. You a Chico. You cool, man. And it's like, what the fuck changed?
That's fuck. Yeah, dude.
You know what I mean? The Z in my last name. Like, what the fuck? Like, that, like what's going on? And that is a pervasive issue now socially where certain people get passes, certain people don't. You know what I mean? Where it's very...
It's so weird, man.
Very fucking weird. And it doesn't make any sense. Hard to explain it. You can't explain it into making sense, no matter how hard you try.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those things where it feels like the same side of the room that's pushing the equality and freedom and peace movement are the same ones that are saying for everybody but straight white people.
Yes.
And that's this, like, weird to me, because to me, free love, true equality is loving everybody, not just everybody but white people. And dude, people lose their fucking shit when they hear that. And I'm like, dude, do you not understand how inherently racist you sound? And they're like, well, white people can't experience racism. And I'm like, dude, you can't say that, though, because nobody gets to choose who experiences it.
Right. Absolutely. And nobody gets to choose what interactions that they're going to have with what community and how that's going to go down.
Right. Like,
I felt a little culture shock moving out of Florida, because Florida truly is a melting pot. Every neighborhood that I grew up throughout my time growing up has been, you got a Bahamian guy on this corner, a Filipino family over here. You got a Cuban family over here. You got a Latvian family over here. You got some old Russian Jews that have been here since 43 and they're not moving anytime soon. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it's always had that feeling of like everybody's here. And then going to certain parts of Georgia where I lived prior to living where I live now, Marietta, which is a very nice area. And we picked it because it's like a lot of different types of people. They're cut off. They're these weird. And then I go to like Illinois is a place where I see that. Idaho is a place where I see that, where you have like everybody's segregated. Everybody's all split up. But those groups that live in these enclaves are the ones that want to tell you like, well, you have to treat them a certain way. You have to teach. It's like, you don't know any of them.
You don't know. Yeah.
And it's the same people that I see now being like, you know, oh, Jewish people should leave this one land. And it's like, okay, my wife's family, they're all the Jews I know, right?
Yeah.
None of them are white. They're all from Morocco. Like, they're all technically African. What are we doing here?
Isn't it weird, man, that long time ago, at one point, there was an entire country that preached hatred towards Jews. And now we're doing it again. Dude, like, I understand that people have their arguments over Palestine and Israel and all that, but in my opinion, dude, I can't just rightfully sit there and say, yeah, murder Jews. I just can't, dude. Like,
and I have my own biases, obviously. You know what I mean? Being married into a Jewish family. But I also grew up in the 9/11 America. I was in like 11th grade, I think, or 12th or 10th grade when that happened. And it certainly flavored my opinion as far as extremist groups. Yeah. And when I see any of these groups, whether it's what happened in Afghanistan, I had a lot of friends who went over and didn't come back. You know what I mean? I knew if I didn't have a boxing career, I don't think I would have stayed. I think I would have gone with a lot of my boys and went over and, you know, tried to serve. And it's one of those things that like, that was one of those what ifs in life. And I can't help but remember Palestine. They were cheering when that shit happened, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
Well, and it's a lot of teenagers that are doing this shit.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it's one of those things where
a lot of old people are doing it too, though, unfortunately. But that's because they're the ones, though, that are kind of putting it in kids' heads.
Absolutely. Well,
they're adults that know better.
The way I break this down to people who don't even understand any of the political significance or historical significance either is, first of all, people don't like to talk about how many of the Reich escaped into North Africa after World War II. And that's a major thing. Yeah. With the Grand Mufti was advised by, like, I think it was like 5 of Hitler's top 10 guys made it into North Africa and stayed there for the duration of their lives, which flavored the culture, you know, there, and which is what caused the later expulsion of a lot of the African Jews, Ethiopia, Morocco, places like that. But beyond that, I'm a street guy at my core, right? I grew up running around in the street in Miami in the bad old days where malls were getting machine gunned in the city that cocaine built, right? Wow. And having that experience, if you come up to me and sock me in my face, even if you're 100 pounds lighter than me, I'm not going to not beat your ass back.
Yeah.
And that's the way that I look at it at its basis level. And if I crack you back and knock you out, I'm probably going to run your pockets. That's the law of the land. You know what I mean? If you put me in the position to have to fight, now I'm going to choose when it ends.
Oh, and yeah. So, you can tell these kids haven't got their asses kicked, dude.
That's a big aspect. A lot of these kids live in theory. I think is a big part of the problem with this generation. They live in theory. There's a lack of experience. And then I love, too, when you have, like, Ivy League kids talking about discrimination, where it's like,
oh, I know, dude.
You've never worked on a job that you needed for a boss that's a prick. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, dude.
I've had to break down whole hogs for periods of my life or move pavers and needed the fucking money and couldn't leave. You know what I mean? And couldn't tell my awful, abusive boss to go fuck. It's one of those things that, like, I think everybody should work either in the food industry or the construction industry or one of these worlds that is necessary, difficult, and underappreciated so they can get a real taste of life.
Well, it teaches you too, man, because I remember when I found out I was going to be a dad, I was a college student that didn't go to class, and I was just fucking around doing nothing. I was a loser, dude. I didn't have a job, you know? So, like, found out I was going to be a dad, and I just fucking dipped out on college because I didn't give a fuck about it anyway. I really just went, dude, because it was a requirement of my home as a kid, you know, but I had no fucking use for it. Well, anyway, I had to get a job, and I was like, I've worked, you know, in haunted house attractions. I've worked in the restaurant industry, and fuck both of those. So what do? I work in the retail industry, and dude, it taught me, like, those three things I don't ever want to do for the rest of my life.
Yes.
Only way out of it is hard work. And, like, people don't understand that. Like, thankfully, man, I found my landing when I was not much younger. I was like 23, 24. I got into security, and I've been doing that ever since. And I've moved up the ladder. I'm working a corporate job, unfortunately. I mean, yeah, I like it, man, but, like, this is my passion. Like, I'm trying to chase this while
But those bills got to get paid. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's one of those things that, like, people often tell me, like, oh, why didn't you get into music, like, earlier? Why didn't you go as hard now?
And it's like, pay those fucking lights, man.
Yeah, I didn't own my home earlier. You know what I mean? I didn't have these assets, like, that I have now that I can say, like, oh, I'll take a year and just focus on music. That shit was a distant daydream for sure. You know what I mean?
I think I had to work my job as long as I have for it to hit me one day and be like, dude, I don't want to do this when I'm 40 and 50. I really don't. I think that that's a good thing because I do kick myself in the ass. Like, man, I'm really upset that I waited till I was like 28 or 29 to start doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I needed all those years of living paycheck to paycheck and struggling to be like, okay, this is your future, or you can work in a higher position, which I am now, and do all this other stuff, make more money, and still hate it. So, you know, I'm like, dude, I think I kind of needed that because that was the push that I really needed. Like, yeah, I was like everybody else, you know, when I was younger. I was like, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. I wanted to be an actor, man. I wanted to
Me too.
I wanted to be a professional wrestler because my stepdad was a professional wrestler at the time. You know, like I grew up watching wrestling because of him and tried that and fucking sucked at that. So,
first of all, the best era of wrestling was when we were young. The Attitude era.
Fuck yeah, dude. I mean, it's my favorite.
Was the funnest time looking back on it now. Like, I think it was the death of Owen Hart that soured me to it in general.
Yeah.
But looking back, like recently, in, you know, in the recent past couple of years, I want to say it was Jake Roberts and Diamond Dallas Page both had appearances on Rogan. Mm-hmm. And listening to those stories, it really brought me back to a time nostalgia. Where, like, oh man, because it was that golden age era, I guess you call it, or whatever, that Hogan era, Ric Flair era was like the first taste.
Yeah.
And the then as age, we, yeah. And then as we got older into like our era, that Stone Cold era, that when Triple H was Hunter Hearst Helmsley, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. And people would get down, especially like as I got into the fight world, a lot of guys would really shit on it. But then you'd see the crossover. You'd see Don Fry in Japan,
yep,
getting his forehead sliced. You know what
Ken
I mean?
Ken Shamrock, dude.
One of my favorite videos of all time is when Antonio Inoki beats the shit out of, I think his name was like the Great Mario or something like that.
I think, and I know what you're talking about. Inoki Bill was Burr a legend, man.
Does a voiceover of it. And it's hysterical because it turns into a fight. It was a right match where the American guy was not going along with whatever they were supposed to be doing.
Oh,
you can watch Inoki get frustrated, and then eventually he just literally is stomping him on the ground after a few minutes, just like stomping the shit out. And it's like these were hard men who had a hard job and who threw their bodies into that Mankind versus the Undertaker,
Hell in a Cell at King of the Ring, or no, I think it was Bad Blood.
I remember I teared up as a kid. We were like, he's gonna die. Like,
he's gonna die. Yeah, die. And then you like, got fucking JR in the background just like, he's broken in half, like making it worse, dude.
Oh, he was the best. My
I
God.
Know, man, like
him and Lawler were the best team. That was favorite. My team. That was
that's
my era
too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was like, Lawler and King are mine. I mean, like I still watch it now and it's not nearly as good, but
I can't get into it as much now too, because like so many of these dudes look so Hollywood, where like
that's
in
what
our
it
era,
is, man.
It
it's
was
so
beer
Broadway
bellies and fat dudes and like Mark Henry, fucking Yokozuna putting his ass on people's face, because they kept the comic book cartoonishness of it to a certain degree, and it still felt like intense and exciting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, Shawn Michaels was,
oh yeah, dude,
that was my guy. That,
Shawn,
that was my first man crush for sure, was Shawn Michaels and like the DX days. Like that stuff was like, it was punk rock. That's what it felt like. It felt like
it was revolutionary, man.
Yeah. It was,
it started punk. A whole thing.
And it's never been the same. It's like, and again, like you go back, Dusty Rhodes or Ric Flair, much rather watch an old promo of theirs than anything else. You know what I mean?
But, well, the new stuff, what killed it was they went PG back in like 2008 or 2009. And so I stopped watching it for a long time, dude. I didn't get back into it until 2017.
I even remember the storyline of Gangrel and Christian and like the vampire storyline that they had going on.
Yeah.
Man, this is, you're talking pre-Twilight, baby. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was cool before it was cool. Like, and those kind of like, again, it goes back to like, it was naturally progressive. It was naturally, everybody was in it. Everybody was there. Every walk of life, whether they were really that or it was a joke or whatever, you had like so much natural organic representation. You couldn't do it now, because now you have to like check every box. You have to make sure everybody gets, you know, their screen time or whatever. It's like, that was the Wild West. That shit was a whole different. And like I said, the crossover of mixed martial artists going over to Japan. And then like at that time, there was an organization called Pride, which was like a big fighting organization in Japan.
Yeah.
Those guys were run by the Yakuza, and they would get Japanese wrestlers and throw them in with like professional kickboxers and jiu-jitsu guys from Brazil and just see what happened. And they would tell the wrestlers sometimes like, no, it's a work. You're going to be fine. They wouldn't tell the Muay Thai guy from Curitiba, Brazil, favela, hungry. He hasn't drank milk in months. He hasn't been able to give his child milk in months. He's just out here knowing he's going to make 200,000 yen if he can kill this guy. Like,
basically,
and,
man.
Oh, like, those days were, I don't know how we got on this tangent, but that those days were so fun.
Well, shit, man, if you ever want to get a taste of that old Attitude Era, I don't know if you've heard of them, but there's another promotion called AEW, All Elite Wrestling.
I have, because of some other podcasts I listen to. There is a guy from there, I think, that frequents like, I think it's called Legion of Skanks.
Yeah.
And they talk about a little bit about that, but I've heard good things.
It's very, so here's the thing though, man, like, were you more about storyline or were you more about the matches?
Storyline for sure.
It is going to be tough, I won't lie to you, because that's the main complaint about AEW is a lot of people don't like that there's, it's more action driven and less story. Like they have little, stories, but it's not like WWE where WWE spends an hour of their 2 hour program with storyline.
Yes.
AEW spends like an hour and a half on wrestling and then 30 minutes. They did
such a good job of getting you invested in the characters.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that like was so great about it, because like they grabbed guys from the previous eras and used them to kind of like ingratiate these new guys. And you didn't even realize you were watching guys from that era too. Steve Austin had been around forever. You know what I mean? The Hart family had been around forever. And like, what was Owen Hart? The Blue Meanie. Like he would come out like,
I know. Yeah. He was like the
blue something.
It was the Blue Rocket or the Blue. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. He wore that stupid fucking mask.
Yes.
But see, I remember, I wish I could find it. I don't know where it's probably in my stepdad's dungeon somewhere, but fucking we have a recording. Cause my stepdad watched that pay-per-view when he died.
So did I.
And he recorded the pay-per-view.
So there's a couple of seconds. Footage. Yes, there's a couple of seconds where you can see what happened. I remember watching it with my stepdad, my stepbrother, and my brother. Yep. And we watched, and it was like a flash. You saw him start to fall.
And then it cuts.
The cut, and then you saw a second of him on the ground.
Yep.
And that's then
what we have.
And then the next thing you see is like he's leaving the arena, and they don't really like show you what's going on. You just see like a gurney getting out of there or whatever, like going up the ramp. And I remember being like, What was that? And my stepdad being like, I don't think that was supposed to happen. Like, and then you heard that night. This was the first time that I can remember too, the news moving so fast.
Yeah, because that was back when they had the internet too. That
yes,
was
just starting. We were on a web TV, and I remember like later that night, it was like where you have like a keyboard attached to your television and like a shitty version of the internet, and my stepbrother and me like searching that night what happened to Owen Hart. And then we found like the page where it said that he had passed like later that night or what have you. And it was just like mind boggling. It was like a total mind. And that from that point on, I don't think I looked at it the same. I don't think I watched it the same amount. It was like a kind of a bummer, kind of sad. You know what I mean? It was one of those things where, and then you could tell like Bret Hart was like not the same after that. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that fucked him, like changed him completely.
How could it not?
Well, shit, man, before we wrap this up, I got to throw a little joke at you. Speaking of Bret Hart. So, you know that Bret Hart is infamous for talking shit about WWE, right?
Yes.
Do you know who CM Punk is? Another wrestling individual?
Oh, yeah. I know him from his attempts into the world of combat sports.
Right. So, he does the same shit. He talks a lot of shit about WWE, even though he's there now. But I saw a meme, man, and it had me dying. It was him and Bret Hart, and it said, talking shit, a podcast where they talk shit about WWE for 4 hours. Because they used to have a podcast called Talking Smack from WWE. And they're like, let's get one called Talking Shit. It'll be these two. They could just talk about everything they hate about the wrestling business. And it had me dying because I was like, man, there wouldn't be anyone perfect than those two. Because Bret Hart, in my opinion, he is definitely up there. He's in my top 10 for sure. I mean,
legend.
Yeah, he's for me, he's neck and neck with Rowdy Piper.
Oh, he was a special guy, man.
Right. Like every day it changes. I'm like, today, Bret Hart, tomorrow it'll be it's neck and neck between those two.
The video of him with Bill Maher when they're talking about wrestling.
Yeah.
He was the combination of tough, eloquent. He had that special something, that special. He did stand-up shows later in his life that were amazing. His time as a guest star on Always Sunny in Philadelphia is one of the funniest, like, guest starring roles ever, where he plays the maniac. Like, that guy. They live. Get out of here. They live is one of the best movies of all time.
Oh, dude,
and relevant nowadays.
Well, that's one of my favorite movies, man. Like, because of Rowdy Piper and because I'm a big John Carpenter fan, the guy that made that movie.
What's the other guy's name? David.
Keith David. Yeah.
Keith David.
In The Thing as well.
Another amazing. Carpenter. He is one of those guys where like his voice is so iconic. He's right under Morgan Freeman, in my opinion. When you hear his like narration over something where you're like, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be amazing.
Well, I hate to do it, but duty calls. I would love to have you back on again.
I'd love to be on anytime, man. This has been a great chat.
Well, before we close, I'd like to give you this time to tell the listeners where they can find your content, if you will.
Absolutely. You can check me out on every streamer available. I'm on Spotify. Check me out. It's D-R-O-O, Drew. I just had a single come out this month, and I'll be having another one come out next month, and I try and push one out every other month at the least. And if you like somebody who puts their whole guts into everything they're doing, then I'm your guy.
Hell yeah, man. It's been a pleasure, and I really can't wait to have you on again, man.
Absolutely. I can't wait to be on with you guys again. And tell Austin I said, hey, I want to chat with him next. I need a rant from him.
Oh, he'll be on. He's currently starting a business right now, and it's a food truck, which is causing awesome. A lot of ass. So he's
lot of work. Yes. Yeah. That's a lot of work, man.
But thanks guys for listening. If you like what you heard here and you want to check out more, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as YouTube. That's at the Great Girth Podcast. I am Tony. Thanks again, Drew, man. I will see you hopefully soon.
Very.